Wednesday with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And I am back with my guest, Jean Blasberg. I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Jean. Hi.
Hi, Patsy. Great to be here.
Wow. You are such an award-winning author and best-selling author. And I remember when your book came out in 2019, it was called The Nine, and yep. It was, you know, right sort of in the middle of the pandemic, and I didn't get to interview you for that one. I do remember the long list of awards you got for that book. It was so wonderful. I think your whole Amazon page was just filled with this long list. So I'm really excited today to, you know, be able to talk to you because it is, well, you know, this book, the new book, is so good. And it's called Daughter of a Promise. And I'll let you tell the story behind it. But I just want to say there's a strange thing I discovered about your writing. I read The Nine at the time, but it was the pandemic, and I some days I was doing interviews for my, I was sitting next to my dishwasher at home doing interviews, so the quality wasn't great, so I didn't get to talk to you. But A Daughter of a Promise, I found it, you know, I want to say a word came into my mind as I'm reading it, and it was calm. There was something right from the beginning. I became so calm when I read this book. So it's a lovely way that you write. There's something so, you know, authors look for their style, look for their voice, look for their, but the, in your writing, you've captured this ability to just draw a reader in and just take them into the story. So, and I love the first page of this book. So tell us about it.
Oh, Patsy, you're making my day. This is my pub day, actually, for Daughter of a Promise. And so, you know, you wake up with a little vulnerability, but this conversation is making me feel great. Daughter of a Promise was born from my Taurus study. I really love the story, or love studying the story of David and Bathsheba, but I saw that it was not at all considering the woman's point of view. Young Bathsheba goes through so much, or Bathsheba in the book, in the Bible, goes through so much, and I was really inspired to tell a story from her point of view. So I think I was trying to capture kind of that wisdom that comes from the Bible. But when Bathsheba, my main character, is living this story, she's only 23. And so I decided to tell the story from a retrospective several years later when she's telling what happened in this one fateful year in a letter to her unborn son. So it did take me a long time to find that voice of both the wiser, older woman and be able to also flip back into scene from the point of view of a young, very enthusiastic 23-year-old starting out her adult life in New York City. So it's a love story. And were you going to say something?
Yeah, no, it is, I love how you've done this. I love the way that you tell the story, the way that you reveal it. It was a wonder, I don't know if that was your first idea of how to tell the story, but it works so well.
Thank you. It was not my first idea. Novel writing takes forever for me. And I was working with a mentor in a fellowship I was a part of at Stony Brook University, and we really were searching for a way to get into the story. One of the biggest questions authors grope with is, why is it important for me to be telling this story now? And why is the narrator feeling compelled to tell this story? So I thought, you know, she goes through this crazy year, but then several years later, she finds herself pregnant again, and she has a lot of trepidation. She's in a relationship, and I don't want to give any spoilers, but she's looking back at what happened when she was young and this relationship really took off the ground, and she's got a lot of thoughts about it. And so that's why she needs to tell this story. She needs to get it down on paper, she says in the first pages, before it fades from her memory anymore, and also because other people have told this story themselves, and she wants her own version out in the world. And in that phrase, I'm kind of making a nod to the Book of Samuel, which tells her life story from David's point of view, which she has issues with.
I was thinking, you know, in my Torah studies too, I thought of a lot of storylines, but somehow this escaped me. That whole storyline is so complicated.
Well,
in the Bible,
well, it is, but the whole relationship between David and Bathsheba has been argued for centuries as to whether it was consensual. And here I was kind of in the middle of Me Too, thinking consensual sex has been an issue for thousands of years. And what is consensual? And then also, like, from the outside, things may look a certain way and you may define it as non-consensual or sexual harassment. But in truth, it's so complicated, and women have agency around their desire and sexual decisions. So I really wanted to write a novel that explored the gray area of consent. I know there is non-consensual sex, obviously, but I wanted to explore that area where a relationship kind of dances around all versions of that, and a young woman is trying to figure things out for herself.
And I when I was reading it, I was thinking to myself, you know, there's been a lot in the past few years, this whole analysis of Jane Eyre, and that, you know, what was this relationship, you know, was it wrong that, you know, an older man
Absolutely.
Would be looking at, and so that whole concept of it's sort of changing, you know, and I,
right.
So, yeah, I really found this, the way you did it. So as I said, I was drawn into the story and became very calm. Unlike in The Nine, where, you know, The Nine, you lose some of your calmness in that book.
You're cringing the whole time you read The Nine, and you were very flattering about The Nine. I saw it as this literary fiction and a work that really explored the relationship between a mother and a son, and all those awards I received were for suspense and thriller, which was something I hadn't been expecting. So it really proved to be a book that put you on the edge of your seat.
It did. And I was, you know, and you're right, because I don't know if it was meant to be that way, but it really was a thriller. And I had always been interested myself. Now, I just want to mention to people, and so people, once they read your writing, I think they want to read everything. But again, it relates in some ways to this book, because here we had in The Nine, you're talking about a mother and a son relationship, and what you know, what a mother would give up, and what mother you know, thought about her son and wanted to do for her son. And so you have that there. And now in this book, of course, now we have an unborn son.
And also, this, Bathsheba has no father, or she has no relationship with her father. And I'm really interested in exploring parent-child relationships. And sometimes the absence of a healthy relationship is the reason we do the things we do. But I hadn't thought as much about the relationship between the mother and the unborn son. That's a really good point.
Yeah, well, there's an underlying theme in your writing, I think. So let's talk a little bit about this whole idea of how women react to things. Now, you have a lot of people who reviewed this new book. What I love about the reviews for your book are that the reviews are as powerful as the book, because obviously the people who are reading this, your book, really, they connected with it, which is so wonderful when you read a review from somebody who you can tell just by the way they write that they've connected with your writing.
Yeah, Patsy, that's probably the greatest satisfaction I've received. The Kirkus review I got, which was a starred review, was obviously written by somebody who was also versed in the Book of Samuel. And I actually had never expected my readership or reviewers to have that background. And so the way the reviewer really got what I was trying to get at, it's the best feeling when you feel like you've connected and expressed yourself well.
Well, and you have, because, well, you also got a 5-star review from Reader's Favorite. And the other reviewers, you could see that they've connected. And I love that. I mean, there's a depth to their analysis. And even Rabbi Elaine Zecker, who is, you know, a well-known rabbi, and how she just got into this book. It must have been really exciting for her, you know, as a rabbi. You've done this story so many times, so, you know, and then you come along and you have this. Well, Gene Blasberg has a way of bringing it forward and really giving it a new life. I think it's wonderful what you've done.
Oh, thank you. I actually owe a lot to the Rabbi Zecker. I've been studying with her for the last 20 years, and her approach to Torah study is that she wants us to find meaning in these stories and encourages us to write around what we don't see in the stories. So my obvious question was, like, what was going on with Bathsheba when her husband was killed and she lost a child, and, you know, all these things happen, and yet you have no idea what her thought process was. And so that Rabbi Zecker's responsible for planting the seed for all of my work.
Well, I love the review. And also David Hirschberg, you know, he's been on the program, and I love his books. And it's I noticed right away his, you know, one of his books, of course, he was on for Jacobo's Rainbow, which I love. And then My Mother's Son. So, again, we have mother and son. What you brought here, I think, has really touched a deep chord with your readers.
Well, thank you. I love David Hirschberg's work, too. He asked me to blurb both of his novels, so I had the opportunity to read them closely. But I think we do have similar sensibilities in terms of bringing some of these ancient, timeless themes, just not really ancient, but more like the core of what it is to be human and love and want to belong and find kind of purpose. I don't know. I really appreciate all the connections you're making here too, Patsy. I'm really pleased to be talking about you on this level.
Well, you know what I love is, and I do have so many of these connections that to the authors, because I've read Rabbi Zecker's, some of her work. I'm sure I met her at an event. You know, I was the president of St. Petersburg Hadassah, and you know, I went to a lot of things, and I remember her. So it's so wonderful when I see this kind of thing and the enthusiasm that they have for the book and for your writing, and all of this. So this is the release date. When did you write this? You know, this pandemic-y years got us all sort of blurred. It's confused our minds, I think.
Yeah, and I actually was writing through that period in order to stay sane. And as you know, the pandemic finds its way into Daughter of a Promise, because I saw it as the type of circumstance would allow for this relationship to blossom and nurture when two people of a much different ages can kind of sequester together.
Well, and you know, we talk about Batseba Ruiz. Just give a little bit of tell us a little bit more about her character and some of the other characters that you have in the book, because they are all very strong and well developed. I really like what you've done with this whole story.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so Bets Ruiz, as she's known to her friends, her full name is Betsabe, is a young woman from Little Havana neighborhood in Miami and goes to college in upstate New York. She's recruited to go to this small liberal arts school, and I think she feels like she didn't really know there was an upstate New York. She thought she was going to New York City, New York. And then majors in theater and psychology, but in an unlikely move, takes a job on Wall Street. The president of a very kind of prestigious investment banking firm was the is a patron of her college and mandates that two seniors be recruited each year to work at this bank, and Betsabe is one of them. She starts out feeling like she's totally treading water and ends up being one of the stars of her training class and therefore gets a plum assignment in the mergers and acquisitions department. So you have her starting out in New York City, and her roommate is a young woman named Ray Stern. And if some of my readers might remember, my first novel was called Eden, and Ray Stern was the baby who was born in the very last chapter in the year 2000. So Eden came out about 2 years before The Nine, but this book gave me the opportunity to reintroduce Ray as well as the women in her family, because they kind of become Betsabe's surrogate family in New York City. They host her for Thanksgiving. She goes to their family home for a holiday weekend. And I use this device to revisit kind of 20 years later what's happened to some of the characters in my first novel. And so when you say they're strong and fully developed, it's because I worked with them for many, many years.
They've been in your head for a long time. It's so wonderful. Oh. This happens to authors. There are some, when you write some characters, I mean, they never leave your head.
That's right. And I wanted a book in which Rachel was redeemed. She was kind of down in the dumps when Eden is. I really look forward to the opportunity to have her be a close friend and source of support for Betsabe. And then in addition, when Betsabe starts out in this investment banking training program, the young man from her college who was also recruited, his name is Ethan Pierce, and he was the freshman roommate at Dunning Academy of Sam Weber, my main character in The Nine.
I know.
So I love these little winks to the greater imaginary world I've created. So I think that's just to answer your question about some of these minor characters and why I knew them so well. But for the rest of the rest of the plot, I really relied on trying to parallel what happened in the Book of Samuel and had to make my own modern twists on things.
Well, I love this. It's, you know, like I have all these golden connections from author to author and place to place. It's just exactly that. That's what you're doing with you, with all of your characters that are taking space in your head. So it's beautiful what you've done.
Oh, thanks. Well, and I think, you know, I had someone ask for a sequel and I was like, I don't really want to write a sequel, but I can have these women show up in the background of another book.
Yeah, it's nice. It's just, it's nice. I love that. I love that. I think it's so clever. And well, it gives them an opportunity to step forward and as you say, redeem themselves sometimes. Yeah. So you are just a delightful writer. And one of the things, of course, I liked also that she studied acting and then she lands up on Wall Street. I love that. Because you never know, you know, when you go to college, you study one thing and then you never know what you're going to become and what all the different things that can happen to you in life.
Yeah. Well, I wrote that from some emotional experience because I was an American Studies and Art History major in college, and I wound up on Wall Street.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
I felt, wow, what did I get myself into? And so I was writing from some of that memory.
And I only recently, you know, I never look at the stuff that the publicists send me. I hate to tell them that because I don't want to be influenced. But once I've read a book, of course, I had already read The Nine, even though I didn't invite you at the time because I don't know, I was in the middle of the pandemic. What a time for your book to come out. But I did look at a couple of things that I one of the things I found interesting about you, I got a kick out of it, that you are a regenerative farm. You have a regenerative farm in Verona, Wisconsin. And I don't know if you're a cheesehead, but what is that?
Okay, so this is another thing that happened during COVID. My husband and I decided that we wanted to sell our family home in Boston and create space and resources to do something new in the next chapter of our lives. And we've always been passionate about food and health and wellness and accessibility to good food and also the environment. So we were watching a documentary one night and I looked at him and I said, we should buy a farm. So it kind of goes from there, but we're in year two of growing veggies and small grains on this 400-acre farm. And we have a really experienced, wonderful crew on board. And we're selling our veggies to a chain of fast casual restaurants called Forage Kitchens, which are mostly located in Wisconsin. There's seven locations right now, and they're a growing company. So hopefully as they grow, we'll continue to sell more and more vegetables. And we're in the process of putting in lots of greenhouses and season extenders so we can grow in more of the winter months.
Okay, so you're only a cheesehead part of the time.
I'm only a cheesehead right now. I'm heading to the farm in a week, and I'll be there until, you know, November-ish or so, but it's wonderful.
Well, it is. You know, I'm from northern Michigan. I'm a Youper. And so we have this wonderful relationship with people from Wisconsin. So I just got such a kick out of it. And actually, my brother and sister-in-law did very much what you did. They were executives, and both of them were executives in major companies. And one day, my sister-in-law looked at my brother and said, we should do something where we can actually see each other. Because, you know, they were always traveling. And my brother said, we'll go back to the farm. And now my brother left the farm when he was 5 years old. So he had no recollection of that, of farming, and didn't know anything. At least when I left, I was old enough that I'd already been feeding the chickens for a few years.
I mean, there's this romanticization of farm life, right? And you get there and it's seriously backbreaking hard work.
Oh, seriously, seriously. But what a lovely time to be in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and everyone should eat all their veggies and hug a farmer because it's a real labor of love.
It is. It's true. It's just so much fun. I think out of that, there's going to come another book. I don't know, one of your characters from Boston is going to land up over there.
Well, you're right. I don't know if it's going to be fiction or if I'm going to be compelled to write something nonfiction about this journey. But certainly the Midwest and an agricultural sentiment is going to end up in my next book.
I have a feeling. It's so beautiful of that time, this time of the year. It's just fantastic. So that's wonderful. And meanwhile, you also, you know, you're so multi-talented, multitasking, really multitasking. You know, you're involved in, you're on the board of the Boston Book Festival, right? Which is
I'm co-chairing the board of the Boston Book Festival. That's a residual of something I really love. And I told you we sold our home in Boston, but we've stayed involved in a bunch of really great organizations. So when we go back to Boston, we don't have a home of our own, but we definitely stay there between a couple months each year, usually May and October.
Well, you're originally from Boston, right?
My husband is. He's born and bred. I have bounced all over the place. I guess that's why it's easy for me to just pick up and go places. And he's now being a good sport about tagging along.
And just, we have a few more minutes. Just tell us about Grub Street and for people who haven't heard about it.
Well, Grub Street is my writing home. It's the place where I really took a lot of classes and got so much mentorship and figured out how to write this first novel. And I was a student and attended their conferences. They have a great conference each spring called The Muse and the Marketplace, which is both for writing skills as well as meeting agents and publishers. So it kind of is a bridge between both sides of the publishing world. I now sit on the board, and during COVID, Grub Street moved to a beautiful new location, but also grew leaps and bounds in terms of its internet reach. And so now I think we offer more, or we have more people registered in our online classes than actually our in-person classes. So wherever a writer might be in the country, you can Google grubstreet.org, and there's a wonderful array of classes you can take on Zoom. And then there's also the opportunity to come to Boston for the conference and meet people in person. But it really believes that everyone has a story to tell and tries to break down the barriers for all people to be able to get their stories out.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And it's Jean McWilliams Blasberg. And the name of the book is Daughter of a Promise. And I just promise you, readers out there, you will enjoy this book. There is something, as I said, there's something calming about it. And the idea of writing a letter, you know, I always encourage people, you know, I call it Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And even if you aren't going to write a book, to write down your memories, to write down the story that you want to share with your unborn children, with your great-grandchildren who are yet to come, write something down, because it is a beautiful thing, isn't it, to see your words on paper.
Oh, it is such a blessing. And Patsy, thank you so much. This was an unexpected joy this morning. I feel like you've really connected with my work, and this conversation was so meaningful.
Well, I did, and I really I feel so honored that I had this opportunity to bring you forward to my listeners. And again, Jean, thank you so much. It is a joy to talk to you.
Likewise. And thank you so much for having me. It was really wonderful.
Okay. Thank you. And bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Wow. What an author. You know, this is elegant writing. I'll tell you, her book, there's an elegance, a beauty. It just shines through when the way she uses words. It's so exciting. Oh, my goodness, I ran out of time. Bye-bye.